Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. It started as a men's clothing store. And since then, the building on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant has been, well, it's pretty much been every other kind of store. Now it's a retro revival, one of the coolest stores in town. There you can find clothes, furniture, art, jewelry, home decor, Scrabble tiles. Owner Susie Joy tells us she'll pretty much sell anything at this point, as long as it's colorful, quirky, and useful.
And speaking of a simpler time, we check in on a restaurant that's brand new, but built in the style and tradition of a turn-of-the-century farmhouse in Aurora. It's Filbert's Farmhouse Kitchen, which is now open for lunch and dinner, and who held the ribbon cutting this week. But first, the news. The Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals, or LUBA, heard oral arguments earlier this month in the case of the 7-acre subdivision on North Maple Street. The proposal was for a 22-lot subdivision on, you guessed it, 7 acres of land. Technically 6.84 acres, but who's counting? The project, which was designed in 6 phases by Canby Development LLC, has been in the works since at least 2015. It was heard and approved unanimously by the Planning Commission in 2017, and appealed to the City Council that same year by local attorney Michael McNichols, Tony Polito, and the Friends of Northeast Maple Street. Counselors heard the case in January 2018, and they also approved it with conditions. McNichols and Co. then appealed to LUBA. Oral arguments were heard before LUBA on January 16, 2019, because nothing moves quickly in state land use decisions. The City of Canby and Canby Development are both respondents, the appellate version of defendants in the case. One of the main bones of contention is over the proposed use of the Malala Forest logging road, which is on city-owned land and exists within a conservation easement benefiting the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. The city approved the subdivision's request to use the road for emergency access purposes, but McNichols, the petitioner, doesn't believe the city had the legal authority to grant such a variance, and that this use would be out of line with the existing easement and municipal codes. Prior to oral arguments, the last hearing in the case had been over Canby Development's motion to dismiss, which the board heard in December and denied. A final decision is expected on February 14th. Happy Singles Awareness Day. Wake Park, Maple Street Park, Legacy Park. They all have their strengths and weaknesses, but who will get the rose? Splash Pad. Sorry, I've been watching too much The Bachelor. A public meeting was held in City Council Chambers Tuesday night to discuss the location of the city's new splash pad, a water feature that has been at or near the top of the community's wish list for many years. It's all but certain that a splash pad is coming. The big question is where to put the thing. Several participants argued persuasively that the feature should be placed downtown, the potential to spur economic growth and development and activate the city's historic downtown core is something no other location can offer. Here's Canby Area Chamber of Commerce Board President and Gwen's Coffee House owner, Mallory Gwen.
We will attract people from outside of Canby as well, just like we used to go when our kids were small, we went to Hubbard. And because it was there, we knew about it, and that's where we went. We need more eyes on downtown as we, there's such good things happening right now, we love it. I think focusing people's attention on downtown is still a really good thing.
Though Wake Park would appear to be the favorite for downtown locations, it's not the only possibility. Chris Calkins proposed a unique idea, one that would involve land not currently owned by the city, but which would honor one of the most beloved and emblematic figures in the community's history, L.C. Cutsforth.
I was thinking about where it can be of most use, bring a lot of these things, kinetic energy, and I had a vision, which was the L.C. Cutsforth Memorial Splash Park, a new splash park right here in either this open lot here or the one across the street right here in the heart of downtown. I'm not going to speak for Elsie or the Cutsforth family, but people know that she believed in this part of downtown, and honoring her with a new park that doesn't change Wake Park. I wouldn't touch Wake Park, but that wouldn't change the existing parks that everyone enjoys and uses. The SDC funds are there to purchase land, to add something new to the town and make it very exciting.
It would also be the city's first park to be named after a woman. Not everyone agreed that downtown was the best location, however. Purchasing land may not be possible or may be prohibitively expensive. Changing Way Park could negatively affect the park's greatest asset, the popular events that it hosts throughout the year, including the Canby Independence Day Celebration, Canby Big Night Out, the Cutsforth Cruise and Car Show, and Light Up the Night. Local community leader Greg Perez said most of the residents he's spoken to believe Maple Street Park should get the splash pad for a number of reasons. In particular, he believes it would be the most cost-effective solution.
And the ideal place would be to be cost-effective would be Maple Street Park, due to the fact that the streets are going to be redone, the sidewalks are going to be redone, the city owns the property, the water and electrical are already there, so it's not going to cost an exorbitant amount of money to have that already done. There are bathrooms there, there's a snack bar there, and they're going to reconstruct the parking, so there will be more parking there as well.
The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will take the feedback from the meeting and make a recommendation to the City Council, who will make the ultimate decision. It's expected in February or March of this year. Once a location is selected, work will proceed with the real fun stuff, designing the city's newest attraction. Canby City Council at their last meeting approved an agreement with the county that will allow the estimated $2.1 million improvement project on South Ivy Street to move forward. The section of road between Highway 99E and Lee Elementary School, which is currently under county jurisdiction, will be finished to city standards with sidewalks, ADA ramps, a bicycle lane, and a traffic signal at the intersection with Township Road near Bethany Church. Once the project is complete, the city will assume ownership and maintenance of the street. The county will need to purchase rights of way to make the necessary improvements, and there is a residential driveway that lies within the intersection of Ivy and Township that will need to be addressed. The city has committed to approximately $438,000 of the estimated $2.1 million price tag. Mayor Brian Hodson estimated that this is a project the city has been working toward for over 6 years, though they were limited in how much they could do while it was under county jurisdiction. After such a long wait, City Administrator Rick Robertson said he was prepared to do whatever he could to fast-track the project on their end.
I will tell you that the county is chomping at the bit to get started on this project. I have committed to them that if you approve this resolution and IGA tonight, that I will hand-deliver it to them or have a staff person hand-deliver it to them in the morning so that they can get it to ODOT so we can get this project underway. That's how anxious they are to get it moving.
However, the truth is that construction still isn't expected to begin this year or next. In a previous interview, the assistant director of the Clackamas County Department of Transportation said the next step will be to hire a design consultant for the project. Once they're in place, the county will have a better idea of the timeline. Police beat for the week of January 8th through the 14th. On January 8th at 9:34 a.m., police responded to a report of a pickup truck, quote, drifting and burning out in a store parking lot on Hazeldale Way. Truck smashed into a parked vehicle, then left the scene without attempting to contact the owner. That's not very considerate. Through surveillance video and investigation, officers were able to locate the hazardous driver. I mean, all they had to do was find the guy driving a pickup truck like he thought he was in the Indy 500. On January 9th at 7:04 p.m., officers responded to a report of a domestic disturbance. Although no physical altercation had occurred, one resident was transported to a medical facility for injuries caused while damaging household property. Another was arrested on a Washington County detainer and for being a felon in possession of a restricted weapon. Methamphetamine and drug paraphernalia were also seized from the residence. Later that night at 9 p.m., following a report of a theft from a local store, officers stopped a vehicle matching the witness's description. The driver reportedly ingested heroin as the officers were approaching the vehicle, which, if you're taking notes at home, that's the worst possible time to ingest heroin. The driver was cited for providing false information to a police officer, possession of a controlled substance, driving while suspended, and driving uninsured. On January 10th at 12:10 a.m., officers found a man who had been reported missing lying on the sidewalk in the rain, so that's where he was. An officer transported the man to a mental health facility for evaluation. On January 12th at 2:48 a.m., a man was contacted outside of the Canby Police Department after he fired a gun into the air. That's not a good idea. Officers subsequently transported the man to a mental health facility for evaluation. Finally, on January 13th at 1:53 a.m., a vehicle was stopped for driving at night without headlights, but that was the least of their problems. The driver and their three passengers were all minors. They were cited for curfew violation and minor in possession of marijuana. protective custody until they could be released to their parents.
For some people who enjoy a well-brewed craft beverage at the end of a day, living in the Willamette Valley is like living in paradise. There are literally hundreds of craft breweries, wineries, and cider presses producing amazing stuff right here in our region. It actually can be a little overwhelming, but it's also very exciting if you have the right guide. That's why I love visiting the FOB Tap Room in Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway. They have over 36 taps of the absolute best craft beers, ciders, and wines, which are constantly rotating in a wide variety of styles, and their friendly staff has the expertise to recommend something you're guaranteed to love. They've got an awesome trivia night every Wednesday and other events happening all the time, so be sure to connect with them on Facebook so you don't miss out. See you at the FOB.
The Cremation of Sam McGee by Robert William Service. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The Northern Lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge I cremated Sam McGee. Now, Sam McGee was from Tennessee, where the cotton blooms and blows. Why he left his home in the south to roam round the pole, God only knows. He was always cold, but the land of gold seemed to hold him like a spell. Though he'd often say, in his homely way, that he'd sooner live in hell. On a Christmas day, we were mushing our way over the Dawson Trail. Talk of your cold through the parka's fold that stabbed like a driven nail. If our eyes we'd closed and the lashes froze till sometimes we couldn't see. It wasn't much fun, but the only one to whimper was Sam McGee. And that very night, as we lay packed tight in our robes beneath the snow, and the dogs were fed and the stars o'erhead were dancing heel and toe, he turned to me, and "Cap," says he, "I'll cash in this trip, I guess, and if I do, I'm asking that you won't refuse my last request." Well, he seemed so low that I couldn't say no. Then he says with a sort of moan, "It's the cursed cold, and it's got right hold till I'm chilled clean through to the bone. Yet 'tain't being dead, it's my awful dread of the icy grave that pains, so I want you to swear that foul or fair, you'll cremate my last remains. A pal's last need is a thing to heed, so I swore I would not fail, and we started on at the streak of dawn, but God, he looked ghastly pale. He crouched on the sleigh, and he raved all day of his home in Tennessee, and before nightfall, a corpse was all that was left of Sam McGee. There wasn't a breath in that land of death, and I hurried, horror-driven, with a corpse half-hid that I couldn't get rid because of a promise given. It was lashed to the sleigh, and it seemed to say, "You may tax your brawn and brains, but you promised true, and it's up to you to cremate these last remains." Now, a promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. In the days to come, though my lips were dumb, and my heart how I cursed that load. In the long, long night, by the lone firelight, where the huskies round in a ring howled out their woes to the homeless snows, oh God, how I loathe that thing. And every day that quiet clay seemed to heavy and heavier grow. And on I went, though the dogs were spent and the grub was getting low. The trail was bad and I felt half mad, but I swore I would not give in. And I'd often sing to the hateful thing, and it hearkened with a grin. Till I came to the marge of Lake LaBarge, and a derelict there lay. It was jammed in the ice, but I saw in a trice it was called the Alice May. And I looked at it, and I thought a bit, and I looked at my frozen chum. "Then here," said I, with a sudden cry, "is my crematorium." Some planks I tore from the cabin floor, and I lit the boiler fire. Some coal I found that was lying around, and I heaped the fuel up higher. The flames just soared, and the furnace roared such a blaze you seldom see. And I burrowed a hole in the glowing coal, and I stuffed in Sam McGee. And I made a hike, for I didn't like to hear him sizzle so. And the heavens scowled, and the huskies howled, and the wind began to blow. It was icy cold, but the hot sweat rolled down my cheeks, and I don't know why, and the greasy smoke in the inky cloak went streaking down the sky. I do not know how long in the snow I wrestled with grisly fear, but the stars came out and they danced about ere again I ventured near. I was sick with dread, but I bravely said, "I'll just take a peep inside. I guess he's cooked, and it's time I looked." Then the door I opened wide. There sat Sam, looking cool and calm in the heart of the furnace roar, and he wore a smile you could see a mile, and he said, "Please close the door. It's fine in here, but I greatly fear
You let in the cold and storm. Since I left Plum Tree down in Tennessee, it's the first time I've been warm. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that will make your blood run cold. The Northern Lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night on the marge of Lake LaBarge I cremated Sam McGee.
I got an interesting sense of humor. So I'm here at Retro Revival with the owner, Susie Joy. Susie, how are you?
I'm good.
Good. You excited to be on the podcast?
Sort of.
Well, let's start by telling me a little bit about the store. You've been here for how long in Canby?
It'll be 5 years at the end of April.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, originally from Oregon City. How'd you wind up here?
I live in Aurora and was driving to Canby all the time to do your standard stuff, groceries, et cetera, friends yeah. are here. And drove by this location here on the corner of 3rd and Grant. It was empty, and I said, look at those windows. I'm going to move. And I was here a month later.
Yeah, yeah. Great windows, great visibility from the park, which is our most popular park here in town, Wake.
Yeah.
So, and it was empty at the time.
It was empty at the time. It had been an office before that. And before that, it was a bookstore. I think I've heard about everything that's
it's been
in this spot.
Yes. Yeah, I bet. And people remember. Yeah, they remember
they do.
All the things.
Did you know the first thing that was here was, it was called like men's and togs or men's and boys' togs or something like that.
Yeah.
It was a clothing store for men.
It's hilarious.
Right?
Yeah, a haberdashery, perhaps.
I don't know. It was the 60s, so
yeah.
You know,
oh, okay.
Go
that
from there.
Haberdashery might have been a little older. When I first came here to Canby in 2008, it was a Christian bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I got like a... My wife got me like a ring here with a Bible verse or something on it.
And then a little coffee shop in the front.
Yeah, it was a Christian bookstore and coffee shop.
Yeah, and they had actually moved here from
Footprints?
First
Was it called
Street.
Footprints?
I don't remember.
It might have been, anyway.
But they moved here
somebody
from First
listening
Street.
Will remember.
I know, like, and they'll comment in your comments.
Yeah, they'll be like, from April 2007 to March 2009.
And they had a big Oregon Ducks duck in the window.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
No.
Right there.
Okay, cool. Well, so how did you wind up in the business that you're in? And how do you describe it? You don't describe it as an antique store.
No, I'm not an antique store. I've never claimed to be one.
How did you wind up in the retro revival business?
The retro revival business. I was...
You were going to say technically...
Oh, technically, antiques is 100 years and older.
Oh, okay.
And
I didn't realize
that. Yeah,
there's
an actual term.
Hard
that
limit to
it's
it.
A hard limit.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
okay.
And then
fair
vintage
enough.
Actually has a soft limit, depends on who you talk to, 25 years or 50 years, something like that. But I was stay-home mom, carting kids around, selling stuff. I had a space in a shop in Oregon City called Lavender Hill Cottage, and a lot of people know that one.
Yeah.
I was partnered with a friend. We were doing our thing, selling out of there, and... The owner got into some hard times and was the rent was due and she hadn't been paying it. And the owner of the building came to us because we'd gotten to know the owner.
Yeah.
And said, we're going to have to shut down. Did you realize that? And we went, no. And we bought the business and took over.
Yeah.
My friend and I, Tracy.
Yeah.
And
so you literally fell into it.
We literally fell into this business.
You were just working there.
I wasn't even working there. I was just selling out of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had a little space and a
consignment.
Corner. Yeah.
A little bit.
It's where you rent a space.
Yes, gotcha.
And put your stuff in there and you get a check every month.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was literally in less than a week that happened.
You were the
she
owners.
And I. We were the owners.
Yeah.
We did that for a while and it was...
Did you keep the same name?
Yeah, we kept this Lavender Hill Cottage and it's still in business. When I moved here, Tracy took that name.
Gotcha.
Anyway, so it was the three houses that are on 14th in Oregon City across from the Subaru dealership next to where the produce place was. And one of the houses came open for us to stay in business there. There had to be businesses in all three houses. So grabbed another friend of mine and we opened Retro Revival in the other one because mid-century is my thing.
Yeah.
And my taste.
Yeah.
Lavender Hill Cottage is more shabby chic, a little earlier than I am.
Yeah.
And... opened that, and then they sold the houses. And they've been trying to sell them for years.
It's tough as a business owner. It is. So many things outside of your control. Like,
totally.
Yeah.
And I was, my business partner at Retro, she went back to a full-time job, so it was just me, and I lived in Aurora and was commuting to Oregon City. All my friends are in Canby, drove by this space on Grant, saw the windows, and went, I'm going to move my business.
Yeah.
And I was here less than a month later.
Yeah.
Just like that.
Yeah. So, Retro Revival, and you mentioned kind of the mid-centuries, your thing. Tell me about how you, clearly, like, you even just hear the name, and you get the sense that you have, like, something very specific in mind, and it's bigger than just, like, being an antique store, you know,
totally.
Have a certain vibe and a certain kind of philosophy that that name encompasses and that you're going for. So talk through that a little bit, if you would.
I do. I have never had anyone notice that, and I hadn't really thought that through before.
Well, like,
but it is.
To me, let me just say, like, I'm not a big antiquer person, I think because my parents are, so I grew up, like, being dragged to every antique store and stuff, and
yep.
I think, like, so much of that stayed with me, like, this is boring, you know? And antique stores, to me, are, like, always called, like, Lavender Hill Cottage, you know, like, something like Pretty Flower Antique Shop or whatever, you know, have these kind of cutesy or, like, certain names like that. And Retro Revival, that just, like, sounds cool to me, you know?
Oh, cool. Well, yeah. I call antique stores brown furniture and lots of glass. Not my thing.
Yeah. Things that, like, you have to take care of and, like, you're buying, like, a chore. Like,
oh, there's a good word. You're buying a chore.
Yeah. It's like, now I have to put polish on this.
I don't need any more chores in my life. No, it was a thought process between my friend Diane and I, and we like color, we like fun, we like quirky, we like just different stuff. And my philosophy is I want everyday people to be able to afford good quality stuff that isn't going to break the bank.
Yeah. It's like maybe not even made in China, perhaps.
Totally not made in China.
Imagine that.
Maybe Taiwan if you're in the 70s.
Right. Yeah.
But
that quality,
the quality, and have that look, and then to show people that you can mix the thing that you inherited from your great aunt Bertha with IKEA with this and have a look that is you and colorful and friendly. And then when you're tired of it, 5-10 years later, you can pass it on to someone else and not feel like you shouldn't do it because it cost you $300, $400, $500.
Yeah.
It's easier to make your stuff change with your life as you grow. So that's kind of my idea.
It's awesome. I feel like that appeals maybe to younger people, like maybe more my age.
And actually, that would be right.
Yes.
It does do that.
Yeah.
You know, that 20s, 30s, maybe early 40s.
I feel like
40s.
You're going to say something, but first, why do you think that is?
I think...
Because this is not stuff that they grew up with. They're not that nostalgia thing.
No, but I think it appeals, one, a price point is a thing. But that it's different than what they imagine an antique store is. And they can come in here and see, oh, hey, you know, this isn't the same. Maybe this can work. And it's not IKEA furniture. It's not Target furniture. It's not Fred Meyer furniture, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's
unique.
It's unique and no one else will have it.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And I do think retro is cool a lot of
it
times.
It is. That,
like,
is a good tag word.
Yeah. You know, like Stranger Things is huge, you know, things that are kind of calling back to that 70s, 80s, but in a not cheesy way, you know, are really big right now. And even like people who didn't live through, like I was born in the late 80s, you know, that it's just a very cool time to me, you know? To be
that
able to
actually
capture a piece of that.
Yeah.
You know,
and
right
that
here
wasn't
in
on my brain because, you know, thinking that, but that's how it's turned out.
Yeah. But anyway, you were going to say, I think also
but
that it...
also, the older generation, say 50s, 60s, 70s, are downsizing so much.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah.
How much change is happening in their lives, either because of money or family dynamics or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I get a lot of that where they're moving from a house to an apartment, a house to a condo, and having to just change their lifestyle and really enjoying that change a lot of times.
Cool.
So it's kind of fun.
Cool. Well, so I'm here, so I can look around and see. But for our listeners, can you give a sense of all the different stuff that they might find here? We've got clothes, we've got jewelry.
The furniture, art, and what I call mixed media, which is kind of weird art supplies, I guess.
Weird art supplies. Okay, for what is that called? Shoot, there's a name for that. Type of collage kind of art.
It is mixed media.
Is it called mixed media?
Mixed
okay,
media.
I'm sorry. But yeah, I've seen that. It's huge right now.
It is.
Yeah.
And I've actually been doing mixed media art for years.
Okay.
And that part of the store came about because
so many cool
people were
things.
Seeing the stuff I was making and they were going, where do I get that? Where do I find that? Where do I get it? I'm going, okay, maybe I just need to share my stuff. And so that's how that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just said, okay, I'll just share what I found. I had too much anyway. So.
Yeah, yeah. So did you get artists to come and check it out or, get inspired?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Or even non-art. I mean, I think art is in everybody, but
yeah.
Non-practicing artists maybe.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well, we're almost out of time. Is there anything that you'd like to kind of wrap up with? Anything that you're kind of promoting this year or that you just want to put out there as we close?
I don't have any really promotions. I do 10% off every first Friday. That's the only sale I do.
Cool.
And I'm open late. Till 8 on every first Friday.
Awesome.
And it's the whole store, even if it's brand new in here.
Yeah. 7 days a week.
Open 7 days a week?
Open 7 days a week. That's
thank you, Tina.
A big deal.
Tina jumping in there at the
I
end.
Know.
Yeah, she just had to get on the podcast. I'm telling you, she's been dying.
I couldn't do this without her for sure.
She's shaking her head.
And I don't know. I guess when people ask me to describe what I decide to bring in here, because I am really picky about what comes in here, I say it has to hit two of three things: colorful, quirky, and useful.
Mm.
So if it's two of those three things and it appeals to me, then I figure it must appeal to someone else too.
That's cool.
So.
Colorful, quirky, and useful. That's how I try to live my life, actually.
Yeah.
It's to be quirky and useful. Sometimes colorful. Awesome. Well, definitely, if you've never been by Retro Revival, if you still think it's a Christian bookstore or whatever, come check it out. It's an awesome store, and Susie and Tina are great people to meet, and maybe you'll be inspired to some new art project or something new for some new direction for your living space. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Thank you.
Really
thanks
fun.
For coming by.
Yeah, absolutely. 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like DirectLink. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships, whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology. DirectLink is here for our community because they are part of our community. Beyond just working in Cambie, most of DirectLink's employees live here as well. DirectLink's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean, the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we've found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness. Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis depending on availability, with a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people and a teepee that sleeps 8 or more. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com.
All
So just tell me your name and what we're doing here.
Aaron Wolf. I'm the general manager at Philbert's Farmhouse Kitchen in Aurora. We're just celebrating our ribbon cutting.
Yeah. Is it normal to have a ribbon cutting like a month after you open?
You know, actually, oddly enough, I think it is.
Yeah. You guys have been busy.
Very busy.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate to have the reception we've had from the community. There are a lot of really wonderful people here, and they've definitely been very kind and very inquisitive about us, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for folks who haven't been yet, tell us a little bit about Philbert's and some of your food that you offer here.
So we're basically an American comfort food, near fine dining style of restaurant. We want to make sure that people could come in feeling comfortable wearing t-shirt and shorts,
yeah,
or dressed up a little bit. We have two different places where you could eat. One's a little bit more casual, one's a little bit more dressy, has a chandelier, but we offer the same menu in both places.
The nicer place, you put little bow ties on all the food.
Absolutely.
Yeah, show.
Nice
little touch.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah, the food wears jeans and
In the other side, yeah. Canadian tuxedo. Yeah.
Cool. And talk about some of the dishes, some of your kind of signatures.
Yeah, so sticking with that American comfort food theme, we've got green chili cornbread with a bacon and onion marmalade. We have pork chops with a hazelnut or filbert crust and an apple slaw essentially on top. We have other things like a fried chicken sandwich at lunch, you know, things that you would think of in American comfort food.
I don't know why you guys didn't just stop at the deviled eggs. You got those perfect. It must have taken quite some will to keep going once you hit that.
Deviled eggs, farmhouse.
I would have called it a year at that. But
yeah.
Well, last time we talked to Aaron, you guys were still literally building.
We were.
There were people hammering in the background.
Yeah.
We weren't quite sure when it was going to open. We just knew that it was going to open. You've been open now for about a month. Have you learned anything new? What's it been like?
Yeah, I've learned a lot in the last 34 days.
Right.
You know, basically what we've learned is kind of how I started, which is the community that we're serving. Mm. Just the people are awesome.
Yeah.
And my staff, my crew, I can't speak highly enough about them, how hard they've worked, how much time they've put in, how seriously they've taken it. And, you know, I think it really shows in many ways.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, you guys definitely have my recommendation.
Yeah,
I love this place. I think what you guys are doing is awesome. I love how you're capturing the tradition in the food with the farming, and literally the tradition with it being partially built in a 100-year-old farmhouse. I think it's awesome. So thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Look forward to many more meals here. So
looking forward to taking care of it.
All right. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you.
Hey, Can Be Noun listeners, this is Frankie. Tyler's nowhere to be found, but that's okay because we're doing Soapbox a little differently today. If you go to our website, canbenowpod.com, and go to the Soapbox section, you'll see our newly created opinion section. And there's an article on there that I posted that's just my opinion about the meeting that happened this week on the splash pad location and my thoughts on where I think it should go. And I'm just going to read it to you. It's called Let Me Be Frankie, Dude, Where's My Splash Pad? So there are many possibilities for the location of the new splash pad, but the front runners are Maple Street Park, downtown Canby, and Legacy Park, though it appears to be a more distant third at the moment. Listeners of our show will not be surprised to hear I agree with several who spoke at this week's meeting in believing that the splash pad should go downtown. Let's face it, however you do it, a splash pad is not an inexpensive proposition. Yes, the funding is there, but let's not kid ourselves, it's going to cost money. So if we're going to spend the money anyway, why not do it in such a way that it brings dollars back into the community? Only locating the splash pad downtown has the potential to do that. Downtown has the most parking, and it is the easiest to find. No one outside of Canby knows where Maple Street Park is, believe me. I live outside of town, and I had to Google it. But downtown, it would be a draw. And only downtown Canby has a high concentration of locally owned small businesses who would greatly benefit from the increased traffic, with residents regularly visiting the downtown corridor and new visitors seeing what downtown Canby has to offer.
Our downtown core has some great things going for it right now, but it also has too many empty storefronts and buildings. They sit there, sad, ignored, just waiting for a strong argument as to why someone should invest their hard-earned money in downtown Canby. How often does the park system have the chance to make such a direct and lasting impact on the city's economic development? Almost never. It would be a shame to let it pass by simply because another location was logistically easier or offered short-term cost savings. A splash pad at Maple Street Park would be a great benefit to the children and families who live near Maple Street Park. A splash pad at Wade Park or anywhere else in downtown Canby would benefit the entire community, families, and business owners. Let's not take the easiest road or the path of least resistance, and please, for the love of all things holy, let's not rush this important decision. Let's be bold, thoughtful, and forward-thinking as we plan our city's path strategically and take this important step into a brighter and more vibrant future. So this article is posted on our Facebook page. We'd love to hear your thoughts on my opinion or where you think the splash pad should go. You can comment on Facebook or directly on our article at canbynowpod.com. And if you'd like to submit your own opinion, I'd love to hear it. You can contact me at info@canbynowpod.com. That's it for this soapbox. Thanks for listening. And we're going to kick it over to history. See ya. Canby Then is brought to you by Retro Revival. They are not your average antique shop. Open daily, find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant in downtown Canby. As the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners discusses the future of the Canby Ferry this week, we thought it appropriate to take a look back at our series on the ferry's history from our first two episodes. Service at the Canby Ferry stopped in January 1946, when heavy rains and high waters ripped the ferry from its moorings and smashed it against a riverbank downstream. The damage was deemed irreparable and there wasn't enough money to buy a replacement, so service was simply discontinued. But 6 years later, a grassroots effort began, led by local business and civic leaders, to bring the Canby Ferry back. On July 2, 1952, Clackamas County agreed to re-establish service after a delegation of Canbyites presented a petition in favor of the ferry's return, signed by over 800 citizens. The Canby Herald had a colorful description of that hearing, saying Clackamas County Judge Wallace R. Telford tried to keep strictly to the subject of the ferry and several times interrupted speakers who seemed inclined to stray to other subjects. One opposition speaker was asked to get back on track when he announced he was going to tell the story of the three drunks. The audience never got a chance to hear that story. In other words, it was pretty much your typical public meeting. The new improved Canby Ferry was put into service in the summer of 1953, following a dedication ceremony on the river. It was christened the M.J. Lee after Miller Jerome Lee, M.J. to everyone who knew him, and also sometimes known as Mr. Canby. His is a story for another time. Suffice to say that he was the son of some of the town's earliest pioneers, the, quote, first white child born in Canby, as was often noted in the earlier days of newspapers, and a dynamic figure in its early history. Lee had died several years earlier, so naming the gleaming new ferry after him seemed a fitting tribute. Ora Lee Catley, his cousin and a noteworthy figure in her own right, christened the new vessel by smashing a bottle of champagne over its hull. Many years later, her daughter would say she out-christened the Queen of England, referring to the fact that Elizabeth II often had to take several swings in her christening attempts, whereas her mother had done it in only one. The decision to reinstate the ferry was a bit unusual because by the 1950s, Oregon ferries were already becoming a thing of the past. When Boone's Ferry was replaced by a bridge in 1954, it left only three ferries still operating on the Willamette: Wheatland, Buena Vista, and Canby, which is still the case today. But the Canby Ferry served a purpose, not only in giving motorists a much quicker and more direct route to Portland, but also for the local economy. Newspapers noted that the ferry trundled many a truckload of grain across the Willamette during harvest season each year. By the 1960s, the ferry had acquired the nickname of the Clackamas County Navy, as it was the only seaworthy vessel the county owned. Like any Navy ship, the first M.J. Lee was equipped with his own lifeboat, although fortunately no one ever had to use it. One of the ferry operators during this period was Vic Hodell, who served as a ferryman for 23 years. He became so well known for the pilot cap and red suspenders he wore that one regular rider asked if she could have his suspenders when he retired. He said that she could, and he made good on that promise when he hung up his suspenders for the last time in 1979. Needless to say, Hodell had some memorable experiences on the river. In 1959, he witnessed the only known drowning of a Canby Ferry passenger,
when a woman's dog jumped overboard midstream and the woman went in after it. The woman was later rescued, but her dog, sadly, was lost. Hodel himself had some close calls. The ferry lost power and stranded him during the infamous Columbus Day storm of 1962. Fortunately, some tugboat operators happened along and towed him ashore. Twice the vessel was struck by lightning while he was aboard, and he saw sparks flying off the steel deck. The worst happened in 1979, the same year he retired, which may not have been a coincidence. A driver near the ferry mistook the gas pedal for the brake and plowed into the ferry with her pickup truck. Hodel had to dive into the river to escape injury. "It sounded like an airplane coming down on me," he recalled. The only known wedding on the Canby Ferry happened on July 3, 1982, when Gresham residents Deborah Schlosser and Kurt Terhar tied the knot on the MJ Lee before a local magistrate. The couple had wanted a private ceremony, in fact they hadn't even told their parents yet. But word leaked and a whole crowd of wedding crashers, including public officials and photographers, was waiting for them when they showed up in tux and gown. The party was too large for everyone to fit aboard the ferry, so the ceremony was conducted with a boat moored. When asked about the honeymoon, the bride quipped, "We're not telling anyone where we're going." The Canby Ferry was the setting of a national TV commercial for Dodge Automobiles in 1987. The ad told the story of a young man driving all night in his new Dodge to see his girlfriend, who meets him at a ferry. The shooting had been set for the Puget Island Ferry near Seattle when the producer heard about the Canby Ferry from a waiter at a Portland restaurant. He drove over to take a look and decided that the MJ Lee was just what he'd had in mind. The production took 9 days to film and was estimated to have dropped $250,000 into the local economy. After 40 years of service, the original MJ Lee eventually fell into disrepair. In 1995, the ferry failed a Coast Guard inspection and county officials began plans to replace it. The new MJ Lee cost $720,000 and was put into service in 1997. Doris Catley Martin, the daughter of Ora Lee Catley, did the christening honors. Canby and the surrounding community came together on September 17, 2014, to celebrate the Canby Ferry centennial anniversary with speeches, ferry rides, fun facts, music, and the unveiling of a commemorative plaque. Descendants of MJ Lee were in attendance. Tune in next week for a continuing series on Canby's founding families right here on Canby Then.
True story. When we first started the Canby Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers, just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real live human and a creative genius who will deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guest today, Susie Joy in Retro Revival. And to all of our sponsors who really make this possible, we encourage you to check them all out and help us support the local businesses here in town. Hey, if you like what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
Friday Night Lights, a packed gymnasium during turning week. The smell of cut grass and the crack of a baseball bat. The sound of a fiberglass board as it shreds across fresh powder. Okay. So, snowboarding may not be the first thing that springs to mind when you think high school sports, but the Canby High School snowboarding team is kind of a big deal. They're actually the largest club in their league this year. We hit the slopes with them in our next episode and just try not to embarrass ourselves.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanbyNow, or on our website, CanbyNowPod.com.